wanna be down with the king.
Welcome to The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, featuring John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
I love being around them.
Get involved by phone at 713-780-3776. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, the kings of Houston Sports Radio, John and Lance.
Well, good Tuesday morning, everybody. John and Lance along with Aaron, and off we go here. We'll be here till 10 o'clock. Jimbo Fisher's going to join us in about 15 minutes right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, your home for the Texas Aggies, taking on Mississippi State this week after a loss to Arkansas. We haven't had to talk to Jimbo about losses too much, so this is going to be a little bit different. Sage Rosenfels is going to talk to us about the Texans' loss. I think we'll be doing that a lot this year, talking to him about Texans' losses. And then we'll also hear from Rory McIlroy. Well, Rory McIlroy on a mobile will join us here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. That'll be at 8:30 right here. He was a little emotional after the Ryder Cup loss. I don't think it was as much about the loss as it was about how much he loves his teammates and how much he loves the event. So we'll hear from Rory a little bit later in the show. But right now we're going to start with the Houston Texans. Some news yesterday, Coach Culley came out with the news that there's no timetable on Tyrod Taylor. So this is Davis Mills' team.
That's what we expected, though,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
I expected a three-game run minimum. I also think that when Tyrod Taylor comes back, it's his team. I don't think Davis Mills stays as quarterback. I think when Tyrod's back, they're going to want Tyrod, because Tyrod was playing well.
Yeah.
And I think this is good early in the season. Now, at some point later in the season, if you're not winning, which I would expect or suspect to be the case, then I think you go back to Davis Mills and you see what Davis Mills looks like, maybe as a starter for a minimum of 5 games this year, maybe as many as 6 games this year.
That's not a bad sample size. I'm pretty sure you're getting him for these maybe 3 games. I was convinced that after the off week that they would have gone to Davis Mills for the rest of the season. I'm not so sure that's going to be the case. Now, I think you're going to get a pretty good idea about him. What if he wins? What if he beats the Bills, then beats the Patriots, and then wins at the Colts and Cardinals? Now we got a different story about Tyrod Taylor here.
If he wins all those games, yeah. I mean, Aaron is like laughing so hard in there.
What? No, it's not like they're not going to be on the football field and have a chance to win.
Yeah, we got a different story. Yeah, sure. If the Texans turn into a 4-1 team,
they've got two losses.
Well, actually, yeah. A 4-2 team.
5-2 team. A 5-2 team.
Yeah.
If he wins 4 games, if Tyrod doesn't come back and he beats the Bills at the Bills, wins the Patriots game at the Colts and at the Cardinals, now we go into the Rams game and we're looking at, you know what, possibly a Super Bowl matchup. You don't know. I mean, so, you know, the Rams come in here and they think they beat the Bucs. That's great. But you got to face the Davis Mills team now. And so you don't know.
What did you have for dinner last night?
That's a pasta. I did not get a pizza from
I think
Texas.
You got a couple of pizzas. And that little chocolate cookie thing. That's exactly what you had last night.
Well, listen.
The garlic knots, the
did
whole
you get
thing.
A cookie? Did you get works. A pizza cookie?
I did not get a pizza cookie. Okay. I didn't. But I'm just saying, that's all I'm saying. Things change. Things could change here in a hurry. And everybody's attitude toward Davis Mills. So we'll see. Justin Reed coming back. Looks like he'll be back this week. Kyemi Fairbairn coming back. Your $4 million.
I saw that, and I kept thinking, you know, Sly's done a nice job.
Except he's missed a couple.
Yeah, I guess so, but it's better than Fairbairn.
Well, he missed it's not a couple. Like Fairbairn would have hit everyone.
He missed a couple for more money.
Yeah, that is true.
I mean, I think Fairbairn is the better. I think Fairbairn's the better kicker. But
I'm not sure.
But, yeah, I saw Fairbairn was coming back, and I'm like, I kept reading you know, I'm tired of reading. I want to hear from David Culley.
Yeah.
I'm tired of reading what David Culley says. One of the things that appeals to me about David Culley is his down home, you know, he's kind of a homey coach. You know, he's kind of, kind of like you get this with a little bit with Jimbo Fisher. You know, okay, got kind of country twang. It. There's certain coaches just make you feel good. It feels like mashed potatoes and gravy. And that's what I like listening to David Culley.
I like to be around him.
I like to be around him. That's right, a great example. And so, you know, the thing with David Culley is I love the personality. You love the personality.
I do. I think I root for the guy.
I do. I root for the guy, too. Not too hard. He's only a good pick. But I think one of the issues, though, John, go ahead.
Well, this is something, and it was something that the media picked up on yesterday, or picked up on, and it was a topic of conversation, was fourth down. And he was asked a few questions about fourth down, and he was asked about making those decisions on fourth down, and here's what he had to say.
David, in general, when it comes to fourth down situations in opponent territory, what goes into the back and forth with the people, the numbers upstairs, and how you come to your ultimate decision, and what goes into that feeling to still kind of make a decision against numbers?
Yeah, that's a good question, because we do use the analytical information that we have. But I think when you're playing the game, a lot of times, and when we sit down and have those meetings, you know, they tell me, okay, well, this is what everybody's doing in the league. This is what the numbers say. But sometimes when you're in a ball game, and depending on who you're playing, you know, whether how good they are defensively or vice versa, what they have on the offensive side has a lot to do with whether you decide to be able to go for it on fourth down or not. And I think a lot of times it gets back to just how you feel.
Well, and that's it. And when pressed further on this thing, Coach Culley says he likes to use his gut.
Well, I think there's been a little bit of struggle simply because of the kicking part of it. A couple of situations we had, whether I may have kicked it when I probably didn't kick it, or I didn't go for it when I should have went for it. And I think that it's just me filling it out and just kind of getting a good feel for how we're playing during that particular time.
Well, and then when asked whether or not, you know, does he talk to other coaches? And especially John Harbaugh, does he talk to him about it?
I've talked about it a lot with John, because in Baltimore, the 2 years I was there with John, I mean, it was a big deal. You know, the analytics on fourth down was a big deal. And John is one of the guys in this league that basically does a lot of fourth downs, goes for it a lot of times on fourth down. And yeah, we talk about it, but basically once you get to this point, you know, more so in the off season than now, and, you know, there's charts that people have. But then again, I just remember sitting down and talking with John, been in staff meetings with John, talking about the analytics and plus the coaching part of it. And in the end, you got to go with what your gut feels, although regardless, you know, that this says that there's a 80% that this works and 60% that this works, but your gut feeling sometimes has to take over as a coach.
Listen, the coach is going to use this guy, and I firmly believe, and you know what? I agree with that. You don't always go with the analytics. You don't always do that. Sometimes you got to go with your gut, and coach does that. Coach is a football guy, been a football guy for his whole life, and you're not just going to go, oh, I'm Jeff Luno now. No, he's not Jeff Luno. He's not an analytics guy. He's a guy that is going to use his gut.
Well, so analytics is what that – I'm not sure what that always – I think it's the same, but I'm just going to assume. On analytics, I think you also trust historical data to give you a context for success or failure. And the only thing that I would say to that – and I get that. I totally get that. And there are – the people who are numbers people will just say that's the way it is, and there's no other way around it. This is eliminates human bias. We want to take your bias, human bias, out of the filter. That's what analytics does.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're being analytical, as Coach said, one of the things I think that can get lost in that, in an individual outing, is how your play calling is going, how the defensive scheming, you know, the defense coordinator, how did they scheme to take away what you do best? In other words, historical data, the context of historical success or failure on any given fourth down, for example, can be altered by what is happening in game. And I'm not sure the his analytics chart will tell him, okay, on fourth and three from the 41-yard line, where we don't go for it. On fourth and two, we go for it, whatever the case may be. But if you are having a difficult okay, historically, that's fine. Do you have an offense that is getting 3 yards easy? Mm-hmm. Do you have plays designed that are set up against
Bill O'Brien didn't even have, he didn't have a fourth down play. Remember when he said?
No, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Not everyone. Some
coaches
some
don't even have a fourth down play in their arsenal.
They have different names for them. Like I think I call them game beaters, or you know, where you have a play that you hold because you when I need it, like a 2-point conversion or whatever, I got to have it with this.
Well, maybe you're ready for that, but remember that Chiefs game, that playoff game. Bill O'Brien said, "Well, I didn't have a fourth down play."
Ready. Yeah.
Yeah.
See.
So. I mean.
So what do you do with when the analytics
well,
tells you?
Well, maybe
to do
he didn't have
there.
An analytics chart with him. Okay.
You know, the analytics on fourth down was a big deal. And
yeah. But it is. It is a big deal.
It's a huge deal. Huge deal.
Yeah.
Anyway, so.
We do use the analytical information that we have.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, so he really thinks that's how it's said.
I mean.
Or is it a different word altogether that we just don't know?
No.
Well,
is that a
now, that is my concern is that we're missing here because we're not like.
Maybe we're not as advanced. Maybe this is. Analytics plus.
What if
A plus, ATH plus.
What if, yeah, because like there's always new metrics coming out and new data. Yeah, like I thought we were looking at FIP and not FIPX and X war.
FIP
and war X FIP.
FIP plus.
Right.
I have no idea.
If you put a plus at the end of it, it's a whole new thing.
Oh, no, my God.
It's a whole new data set. Now, if there's a press conference tomorrow and he goes, you know, I understand there's a lot of people here in the city who are confusing analytics with analytics. Analytics is the study of an individual team's historical success measurements against a data set that is also symmetrically and asymmetrically created through a series of data that has been gathered against a feature that filters out and like,
he's
a different
so
thing.
He's so far ahead of us.
Oh, my God. Analytics is different.
I'm not sure, coaches.
I don't think
that's
true.
We do use the analytical information that we have.
We've got Jimbo joining us on the other side right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, brought to you by Damaris Barbecue. But right now, gimmethevin.com. That's gimmethevin.com. Not dovin. It's gimmethevin.com. Gimmethevin.com. That's all you need when you want to sell your car. Well, you know what? And here's the deal is if you're going to go to the dealership and you want to sell it to the dealership, you want to trade it in at the dealership, that's fine. But go there armed, knowing how much you can get for GimmeTheVIN.com. And then when they won't give you that, you go, well, how about we just do the deal through GimmeTheVIN.com? And GimmeTheVIN.com will do it through the dealership, so all the taxes and everything else is all put in. So there's not going to be any difference there. They can do it through the dealership. So if you're looking to buy a car, you're going to trade it in, well, maybe you can't trade it in because GimmeTheVIN.com is going to give you so much more money. But they will still do the deal through there, so all the taxes work out that way. And if they can't beat CarMax, they're going to send you $100. And that's not going to happen because they will always beat CarMax. One time in the city of Houston, John Claywolf had to pay $100 because CarMax paid like $4,000 more than the car was worth. If you're looking for the best deal on your car, gimmethevin.com. That's gimmethevin.com.
You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5. Welcome back to The Bench with John Granato and Lance Erline on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
7:15 on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Your home for the Aggies, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Bringing in the head coach as we do every week right now, Jimbo Fisher joining us here. Coach, welcome to the show. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
We're doing good, Coach. We don't get to talk. Well, we haven't had to talk about losses all that much. Coach, they came out. Arkansas really came out and ran the ball. After that first quarter, your defense did a good job. What was the difference after that first quarter?
Well, we gave up big plays. We tackled poorly, and they moved us. And they still ran the ball, though. That I can say the one thing that we got to do a better job of, we had six drives, they started inside their own 15-yard line, and we didn't get any three and out. Even though they didn't score because they played on long field, offensively, we never had a three and out. Now, we didn't score, and we got to finish drives. We have to go finish drives to score, to play in a field position battle their game, and got our young offense behind 17-0, changed the game a little bit, and then we battled back to 17-10, which was a disappointing thing. We had two little series there we could have got back in it and we got to finish. But also, we, you know, we need to get some three and outs too and win those field position battles. But they just hit big plays. They ran the football. Nothing extraordinary. We didn't tackle very well. And they got up 17-0. Then we battled it back. And then Michigan puts itself behind the eight ball in the beginning. And you got to match some of those scores on offense. They had two opening drives, 7 plays and 10 plays that were up around the 50, and we missed to execute a couple little plays that had us getting down to, you know, we're in field goal range or maybe scoring touchdowns. And we got behind and lost momentum in the game and played catch up the whole game, and we can't do that.
Yeah, it felt like a boxing match where you know, the early rounds are going to set up the later rounds, and if you didn't, yep. You know, how you started and how they started really dictated that you had to get out of your comfort zone, and they were able to stay in their comfort zone and be able to force you into taking some chances offensively maybe you didn't want to. Can you talk about how the beginning of a game, maybe a first quarter, can really alter how two teams installs?
You can't lose it, but it can take you out of everything you're doing and the temperament and how you got to play the game. And the other thing is, remember, they scored the first three drives and had three and out. And then the next drive, we went down and they were all the way to the 21 to make it 24-0. We got a 4th-and-1 stop. We had them 3rd-and-17. They hit a long pass, get the 4th-and-1 and go for it. We get a stop. Then we're driving, get the field goal. And then we're able to get back to 17-10. I mean, it was critical. I mean, we just didn't start well. And it does. It changed because, you know, you have to too, you know, because if you're not getting a stop, then you got to take chance because you got to assume they're going to score points every time in which you go at. And it changes the whole dynamic of how you have to call, play, and do. And but still, at the same time, you got to match. We did that last year. That last year in that game, they come out and score right off the bat. We had a couple first downs and then didn't get a third down. And they went down and scored, and we come back and scored. And I think we scored. And then we scored 6 straight touchdowns against them. But they were the whole time last year. They moved the ball on us. And they did that. So, you know, last year we were able to match. So, offensively, on the other hand of that, you got to go back and match those scores. And we had opportunities to do it. We moved to midfield, and we just did not execute. And like I say, that's not all. I mean, we got to execute as players, but we got to, you know, find ways to coach them better as coaches.
Jimbo Fisher with us here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, brought to you by Damaris Barbecue. Best damn barbecue, great place to watch your Aggies every week. There are Aggies, so get on over there and watch your Aggies. Coach, there were some questions about, you know, I know in your press conference they were asking you about getting Isaiah Spiller the ball. It's not like you didn't want to, but when you run an RPO, that's the quarterback's decision, isn't it?
No, we did get him the ball. He ran 12, caught 17, and he got the ball. We're down. You have to say you got to change the game plan. You're down 17-0 right off the bat, and you have to come back and throw balls. You have to do balls, and once the ball game was 17-10, we come back, ran a play, gained 8, ran an RPO, hit 8. Hit a naked, hit 8, and they call us the illegal downfield. We go right back to the 1st and 15, 1st and 20 on, and have to make up a series and don't get it. In the next series, we call an RPO. We could have handed it, so we hit it for, we took all of our RPOs, we hit it for like 22 yards to Anias. And then the next play, we have a shot, we're dumping it back to him. You can throw it and catch it. He caught 5 balls, too. He had 17 touches. We'd love to get it to him more, but, and then we were going to have a drive back, and we had him on a dump down. The ball that got tipped, and it was going to have a nice 8, 10, 12-yard game. So we were designing getting it through and getting to as much as we possibly could based on the circumstances and the score. And then after that, you're down 2 scores. You can't go running the ball because you're down with 6 minutes to go. You got to throw it and get back because you got to go score twice.
Was there any question to you that was an interception by Arkansas?
Yeah, I didn't think. I mean, I thought the ball hit the ground from the video I saw, but, you know, that's their call. And I thought he got targeted or he got late hit or a selfish decision. He got, I don't know if that part of you saw, I mean, he got whacked. That's my target. I don't know what is. But at the same time, that would have given us a chance to go play it, and that's critical calls of the game. But at the same time, we don't need to put ourselves in that situation to be in those circumstances. Like, we got to play better.
How'd your, Isaiah, that hit on Isaiah was something. And how is he? Is he he's okay?
Yeah, he's fine. He came back in the game.
Yeah, but
he played the game.
Yeah, but you never know. That was a big hit, Coach. How'd your offense? What did you think about the offensive line this week?
Very inconsistent in some things we did. I mean, we had some really good moves, but like nothing was clean, and we had the ability to run the football, and we're running the football at times. Really were. Once we got control of the game, popped a big run in the second half. Right there, we were getting those situations going, and. But getting better, but we got to protect better in three-man rushes. Our guards got to learn to help on the tackles on the outside, not double inside so much on noses, and can clean up where the main pass rush guy is. And We know we got to play better, but at the same time, some of the young guys really took some huge steps forward. I love some of those young guys, like Father guys. I mean, when Father guys first starting, I mean, really did some great things and playing well. He's going to be one heck of a player. Bryce, you know, he a couple of issues there and there, but he really got better, I thought, playing inside. And we just got to continue to get better. We got to play better, but at the same time, those guys are growing a lot, and that's a hard position to grow at really quick with some of our other guys. We're moving guys around, and, you know, we've been banged up, and that's part of football.
No, I know you're
part of football, and you got to have them.
I know your quarterback's going to have to play better. Everyone's going to have to play better. But the offensive line, which I know you told us how talented they were, and you can see the talent in a lot of positions. I remember I was watching the sideline reporter talk to you after the game, after the second game, the New Mexico game. You said, we're just not getting guys blocked. Like, that's a problem for us right now. And you saw some of the same issues pop up. Is continuity right now? Is it a matter of
continuity? The movements and the blitzes are different things. You got young guys. You haven't had the same group of guys. You've lost. You know, your starting center Luke is out, but he would have been in there, and Bryce would have been right there with him, or playing the guard and doing some things. And where you're at, and you've had different groups every time. Layton's been out now, so you move. You have to move 55 inside, the guy outside, and those relationships and passing off twist, passing off stunt, they take time. And that's now this one. But we ain't got time. We got to figure it out quickly and what we do. And then, you know, all those little intricacies of an offensive line and with different guys playing different positions and trying to get the best five guys on the field, but then get the best five guys to play together. But, you know, that's everybody has those issues, and that's part of coaching.
Jimbo Fisher, head coach of your Aggies here on your home for the Aggies in Houston, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, brought to you by DeMaris Barbecue. How'd Zach grade out, Coach?
Solid, man. I mean, had some things, we missed some throws. And then, of course, when you get pressure, you start bouncing in the pocket, and he bounced, you know, a couple times. He didn't find a couple guys. He found some guys that we didn't get open on some routes that we should have. And, you know, it's a combination across. He continued to grow, and he's got to play better. And we got to play better around him. And we can't get behind the eight ball 17 points in the beginning and what we're doing.
Yeah, Jimbo Fisher here with us. You go from a heavy run team coach, and you know what Mike Leach is going to do. He's going to want to throw it around. How difficult is? I mean, they can't be more opposite philosophies.
No, they don't, because last one had an athletic quarterback who shot, and Mike still throws shots. But I mean, they're going to throw the ball 50, 60, 70 times in the game, and be spread three wide, four wide, all those different things. We're going to have to tackle in space well. We got to get that cleaned up, and what we do. But we're going to have to affect the quarterback. But then you got to pick your moments, how you affect him, when you affect him. And then defensively, they're an excellent football team. They give up 60 yards a game rushing. They're really physical up front. They do a good job there. Secondary got two good corners and a couple good linebackers. They got some guys going to play in the league. And a couple of inside D tackles. They're really good players. I mean, two of the best we've played probably. So, I mean, we're going to have our hands full. This is going to be a heck of a game. And like it always is, Mississippi State last year with them, I mean, we got a block once. And we had three drives, big drives in the game. We were able to run. A few teams were able to run the ball on them last year. Was us and somebody else, and we had some passes and played a solid game and played really good on defense last year. I mean, we had turnovers, we tackled well. I mean, we did a hell of a job last year on defense, and we're going to have another great game both ways this week.
How'd you come out health-wise?
I mean, you got your typical bangs and bruises and things, and some guys will look and as they go. We'll see. You'll find out more today after a day or two after the game.
You know, you have high expectations this year, Coach. It's got to be tough for the kids to take a loss this early in the season, but how do you think they bouncing back?
Well, we did last year. We took a loss last year, and then, you know, losses are going to be fine. Hopefully not a lot of it, but sometimes you are, and you got to deal with it. You can't let one become two, and you got to put it behind you. I mean, you got to look at your mistakes, correct the mistakes, do the things you got to do, and then move on. That's what it is, and improve and get better, and we got to coach better. We got to do a better job coaching, trying to find the right guys, put them in the right position, and ask them to do the right things in the right scheme.
That's Jimbo Fisher every week right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Coach, good luck against Mississippi State.
Thank you.
All right, there's Jimbo right here. Brought to you by DeMaris Barbecue. I know, as I mentioned, Frankie and Yanni, and I don't know if Billy went there, but they're Aggs, good Aggs. And you can go watch your games there. Go watch your college and your pro games there. Got great wing deals over there. Right at 18th Street and 610, 290 right there where the 290 meets 610. So you're looking for a great place to go and get your games on this football weekend or anytime. As a matter of fact, tonight is a big night. Tuesday's nights are always a big night over there. So good to get on over there, hang out. The bar is great. You're looking for a great place to get your food on and your drink on and your football on. Damaris Barbecue. All right, taking a break. 713-780-3776. Still ahead. Rory on a mobile. And we're also going to have Sage Rosenfels going to join us at 9:15 here. Rory's going to be at 8:30. That's just an hour from now to hang out with us here. Don't you go anywhere.
When it comes to sports betting, SportsMapBets.com is the site you need. From weekly betting guides to single game breakdowns of the point spread, money line, over under, and more, SportsMapBets has all the info you need to make the best play. SportsMapBets.com. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, this is The Bench with John Granato and Lance Erline on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, Sam Robinson put out an article that grades in, and he made some points about each of the games.
Who is Sam Robinson?
Sam Robinson is a Yard Barker. Is he with, I think he's with Yard Barker. Yeah.
You know that stuff that's in Yard Barker a lot of times can be just like your read, like a national show in Chicago. What's Kenny's name? Kenny Van Doren?
Yeah.
Yeah. Kenny Van Doren put out an article here, right. And they say, who does Kenny write for?
Climbing Tails Hill.
Fan site. He goes to school and he's an intern.
Yeah. Well, it's all right. He watches the team.
There's nothing wrong with that. I'm just saying, I don't know who Sam Robinson is.
I don't
is.
Either.
So keep that
well
with
it's
a grain
nothing
of salt.
That actually there's a, it's just a bunch of stuff about each game, and he's dead right. on about an antiquated system. Listen, the kick went off 2 full seconds after the play clock expired. Justin Tucker,
well, not the kick.
Oh no, the play before
that was unbelievable. Yeah. At least what we had on the screen,
yeah.
Like, how could every official miss that? Yeah. I wondered if maybe the screen was not synced with the actual clock.
Right.
That's what I wondered, because I didn't see it until yet, and I watched the game live.
I
don't remember it being an issue, but on the screen, it's like, oh my God, how did nobody see? A 5-yard penalty would have sunk them.
Yeah, that would have been over. It would have been done. Now, okay, they could have picked up yards.
We didn't even talk about what it was. We're talking about the Baltimore Ravens, the play before Justin Tucker's 66-yard kick. There's a Lamar Jackson, they're going to try to run one more play. There's no timeouts. There's 7 seconds left, I think. They snap it to Lamar, and I mean,
he just threw it away.
Detroit is on the sidelines. Yeah. They are not going to let you get out of bounds. And Lamar just smartly, doink, throws it out of bounds like, I'm not messing with it. But on the clock, at least on the broadcast version, it hit zero, and it's on zero for a good strong second, a good strong full 1 second. Is it on zero? No penalties thrown, no whistles blown. And the only thing I could think of was maybe that clock on the TV screen was not synced to the actual game
maybe.
Clock. Because why would everybody miss it? And why wasn't a bigger deal made of it at the time in press conferences in Detroit? Did you see anything made of it?
No.
Until there was a tweet?
No, there was. I'm sure that's being sent to the league office. I'm sure Dan Campbell is just irate.
Well, I'm just wondering if the graphic is wrong.
Well, maybe, but no, we've seen plenty of stuff about it. I'm sure the refs are going to hear about it. Other stuff that you're talking about, you know, on this thing is, you know, the Chiefs are making too many mistakes and it's costing them football games. Throwing the ball away is just trying to throw the ball into coverage or making stupid passes at the end of games is really costing them right now. So that is something. They did talk about one thing about the Houston Texans this week. And the one thing that Sam Robinson talked about the Houston Texans is the Texans should not reduce the Deshaun Watson price. They've thus far navigated the Watson turmoil as well as could be expected, deactivating him thrice to start the season. With no legal resolution in sight, but if Fox's report on softening their asking price is accurate, it would represent an unnecessary course change. Watson's legal and civil suits will bring more clarity in the 2022 offseason. A trade then, when more teams will be interested and prepared to make better offers, plus the top 5 pick for this season, would finally start a rebuild. A move in 2021 would represent panic. I agree wholeheartedly. Sam Robinson is sharp for an intern.
Yeah, no. he He's been writing for 10 years. I'm actually just looking him up right now. Freelance sports writer, Cleveland.com, Pro Football Rumors. But he's been writing for a long time, a decent amount of time. I think he's 100% right. I mean, he does sound sharp because that sounds accurate.
That is.
That sounds accurate.
And somebody outside of this market, and, you know, you don't see a lot of people.
Most people just, you just need to move him now and get what you can get for him because you never know. What if he ends up going to prison? What if he's part of a gang that's been, you know, stealing babies and been, no, that's none of, there's no charges on that. It's just booty stuff.
Yeah.
There's no charges. There's no charges on booty stuff.
No. What?
Not well, his. Well, others.
Others' booties.
Yeah, you can't do that. Booties, but yeah. So, no, I'm not reducing price because of the booty stuff. I'm staying with what the price is. Yeah. Now, if your price, and now if it's one of those things, John, where they said, where Nick Caserio threw something out there, and it's like a negotiation where his first number is a ridiculous number, okay, then you can reduce that. Yeah. If that's his whole thing is he wants to get to a point that they that the real asking price is down here, you know, three firsts and a second, and he's asking for three firsts and 3 seconds, okay, that would make more sense for them to soften their stance because all they're doing is getting to what their asking price is.
Yeah.
If that's the case, then I'm fine with
it. No, that'd be fine.
Other than that, though, there is no reason to move Deshaun Watson this year if they don't give you what you want. There's none other than your own impatience.
So for some reason, maybe it's the Tyrod Taylor paradigm here. For some reason, Justin Herbert came up. Justin Herbert is playing great football, played great football after Tyrod Taylor went down with the doctor destroying his ribs or his lungs last year. Now, I guess that's the comparison. You know, well, last year, Tyrod Taylor went down and Justin Herbert was there, and look at how he took off. Now,
oh, you hope
Tyrod Taylor,
that.
Would it be nice if he played like Justin Herbert?
Yeah.
Well.
Oh, my God, the Texans may have got another Justin Herbert.
Here's Coach Cully on Justin Herbert's success compared to the expectations for Mills.
Well, I mean, again, Pep could probably answer that a little better than me because Pep had him there last year. I do know that when he came out, obviously he was a heck of a prospect. And with the situation, obviously, if Tyrod hadn't got hurt, he might not have had that opportunity to be able to do what he did. But he got thrown in there and they did a really nice job with him. And that's unusual for to have that kind of success that he had with that football team.
Yeah, highly unusual for a rookie to play like he has. And, you know, I thought there's a chance that maybe the league's going to catch up to him. There's a chance, you know, because a rookie's got to make adjustments because defenses are going to make adjustments on him. And dude is just really, really good.
Yeah.
He is really good. So now we're talking about pedigrees too. We're talking about a first rounder versus a third rounder.
Mm-hmm.
And a guy that was coming out with – that some people had on their boards as the best quarterback in that draft. So there's a little bit of a difference here. No, not a little bit. There's a huge difference here on what I'm expecting Davis Mills to come in here and play the way Justin Herbert is right away.
I think I wondered when I read that. I didn't hear it until just now. We read the transcripts, and I did wonder if that was a reference right off the bat when you mentioned Pep Hamilton. I wondered if he was saying, "You getting me confused with Pep? Pep's the one who had him last year. He would probably know better than I would." But, yeah, if the question is based on if there is something in there where you, like, I was wondering what the correlation between, why are you asking about Justin Herbert? You're not even playing the Chargers. Like, why is Justin Herbert coming up? Are you saying this could be the next Justin Herbert? Is this because Tyrod Taylor is in both spots? But, yeah, I think that's a little bit of a reach. Like Justin Herbert had some really terrific flashes. My biggest problem with Justin Herbert is I really question whether or not he can handle an NFL locker room. He was from high school. He played at Eugene, Oregon. His college was at Eugene, Oregon. He never left there. He didn't play in any of those high school, you know, elite circuits or any of that stuff. And so, I had a scout tell me, well, this guy is higher than a scout. He's a personnel guy. Say, I just don't think he can handle a room full of guys who are, you know, you got some rough guys, some tough guys. I don't think he has the personality to deal with some of the street dudes that are going to be out there and some of the guys that are he hasn't seen because he's just been this little farm kid from Eugene, Oregon. And that certainly wasn't a problem at all last year. And as a matter of fact, I think a lot of people overestimated it. He's also played better than he played at Oregon. But Mina Kimes wrote a really good article that I'd love to talk about at some point. And it's him playing a role of leader, of quiet leadership, like how he's learning. He's a reluctant leader. So all the my concerns about a Justin Herbert, and I'm going to bring it around to Davis Mills in a second. All my concerns about Justin Herbert, she addresses in her article about how he's a reluctant leader and he's learning to lead and all that stuff. Well, Davis Mills, I think he's tough on the field, which players love. You saw the little fist bump before the game where he was a five-star guy coming out of high school, one of the most heralded pocket passer coming out. Davis Mills has a profile. The profile for Justin Herbert was like three-star guy. Justin Herbert did not have the profile coming out of high school when he was young as Davis Mills. And the reason I'm bringing that up and why it might matter is because Davis Mills has come from a background of expecting to be great. Even if it was, he went to Stanford, played for David Shaw. Davis Mills does have a background of potentially handling bigger things or being expected to handle bigger things. I think that's a really positive, is that I don't think this is too big for him. Not emotionally, not psychologically. The Houston Texans and NFL football is not too big for Davis Mills. The question's going to be, where is he from a football standpoint?
Well, and that's interesting because Alex Smith was on ESPN. He was the number one overall pick. And he said this. He said, I really felt like it set me back starting right away. My first starter was a disaster. I had no business being out there.
They talking about this because of Justin, I assume, Fields?
Probably. Is that why it came up, probably. And you know what? And now it applies to Davis Mills.
Everybody, Justin Fields. Must start. He must start. And then I saw two shows of topics. Are the Bears rushing Justin Fields to start? Like, y'all got to stop.
Here we're just Alex Smith, who was the number one overall
pick.
He shouldn't have been. Aaron Rodgers should have been. Aaron Rodgers went much later in the first round and sat there in the green room. Smith went 9 of 23 in his first NFL start, throwing four interceptions in a 28-3 loss to Indianapolis. He ended up going 2-5 as a starter, throwing 11 interceptions compared to just one touchdown. The touchdown didn't even come until week 17. 1-11 as your number one overall pick.
I don't remember it being that bad, but I knew it wasn't. He was considered a flop at San Francisco until his last season, where he played pretty well.
But let's when not somebody forget, got, he had a different coordinator every year he was in San Francisco.
Did he?
Yeah.
Well, he was a flop until his last year, and all of a sudden he was more of a game manager, and then Andy Reid, they saw something in him and traded for him because he did start to come around a little bit. Although, where was he? Hold on a second. How long was he with Kansas City? Because he was a draft pick in 05. He was the first pick. That's back before it was a five-year deal. He probably had a longer deal back then in 05, so he's probably with San Francisco longer. But this is why it's so important, if you get a chance, to bring him along slowly, or unless you have all the pieces around, like Trevor Lawrence. To me, there are certain players that Trevor Lawrence has pedigree of being. Trevor Lawrence has got to be the savior. There's no reason to bring him along slowly. He's played a ton of high-leverage games. He's played 3 years as a starter. There is no better option. Trevor Lawrence is going to give you the best chance to win. There really isn't. And Trevor has been this kind of a special potential talent. And you see how he's struggling. You see how he's struggling. That interception on the trick play on the flea flicker was terrible, was absolutely awful. Davis Mills has the benefit of having what appears to be decent pass protection. It was decent against Cleveland, not as much against Carolina, but Carolina, I think these pass rushers can handle big power rushers a lot better than speed rushers, is what we learned.
Hey, when we come back, we're going to talk some Astros baseball. There was an article in the New York Post that it got a little attention over here. An interesting article about that the Astros, what they're doing now makes this cheating scandal even sadder. And we'll talk about that on the other side. Joel Sherman wrote that. Right now, though, I'm talking about Chastang Ford. Look, if you're looking for the best way to customize that vehicle, to get into a vehicle that with exactly everything that you want, with a company that is going to just work that deal as hard as they possibly can to get you. First of all, they're going to ask you, where do your payments have to be? That's the most important thing, because they don't want you to be upside down. They don't want you to be choking on your payments. They want you to be comfortable. It's a vehicle. Everybody in the city of Houston has to have a car, because we don't have any. Well, we got some Metro, but whatever. You have to have a car in Houston, and so you don't want it to be so choking that you can't pay for it. But you want the best vehicle that you could possibly have at the best price you could possibly get it, and that's what you're doing a Chastain Ford. You're looking for that Ford car or truck. They are the people to go to. Trust me, they will not add anything on at the end. They just don't do that. And they're going to give you the best deal. They're going to work that deal and customize that deal the best they possibly can. All you got to do is go to ChastainFord.com. You can do it all online. They'll even deliver the car to you. Or you can go to the dealership at 610 on Homestead, not Hempstead, just 5 minutes from downtown. It's Chastain Ford.
Why don't we take a break?
You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
97.5.
The Kings are on the air. This is The Bench with John Granato and Lance Zierlein on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John and Lance.
All right, welcome back on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. It seems like, I don't know, it seems like the booing and the hatred and the vitriol for the Astros has really calmed down. Don't you, do you agree?
Yeah, I haven't really noticed it.
Now, it will probably pick back up in the playoffs. And especially if they have to go to New York or L.A.
Well, obviously.
Yeah.
If they take on the Angels at any point in this playoff series.
The Dodgers in the World Series.
Oh, well. No. Or if they face the Mets in the World Series,
that's not happening
it's
either.
It's going to be ugly.
So, Joel Sherman, he wrote an article.
He writes about the Astros are on his mind.
Yeah.
I can tell you, but I've seen at least three different articles by Joel Sherman.
Now, this was sent to us by the our general manager over on the Sports Map radio side,
right?
Craig Larson. And he's like, we got to rip this guy. And I read this article, and I was like, why? Because he says a lot of stuff that I really agree with. He says, okay, I'm not disgusted, but he's disgusted. I'm still disgusted with it. But here's the thing. 2021 is providing evidence, lots and lots of evidence, that cheating was not everything for the 2017 Astros. Would they have won the title without cheating? That's uncertain. But time has shown they were fully capable of doing so, which in a way makes the cheating both sadder and worse. He says, of the 2017 hitters, Marwin Gonzalez is the only one to fall precipitously. He's right. Jake Marisnik, too. But Jose Altuve, Alex
and White, Tyler White.
Tyler White, White Power, yeah. But Jose Altuve, Alex Bregman, Carlos Correa, Yuli Gurriel, George Springer have remained similar offensive performers. He's right. Mm-hmm. Actually, Carlos Correa is probably having his best year. And guys have been just really, really, really good. And he says, look, Springer, the league's forgiven him. They gave him $150 million, the highest paid free agent last offseason. And Carlos Correa is going to be the highest paid player this offseason.
League forgives everybody who's been league and fans forgive everyone who
Marwin
leaves Houston.
Got a big deal with Minnesota didn't come through. He does say this. He says though that both he talks about Luno, the guys who were suspended, Cora, Hinch, Luno, and that's it. Those three. He talks about them. He says that listen, and he's right in this. Hinch and Cora got off easy because they got suspended for a season, but it was only a 60-game season.
Mm-hmm.
He is absolutely right because let's say you had an 80-game suspension for steroids, you would have still been suspended this year 20 games.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, you would have.
And now, they didn't get 162-game suspension. They got a season suspension, which happened to be a 60-game season. So they didn't have to sit 162, which they might probably should have, that was the intent of the suspension at the time.
Right.
So it was just the wording. It was the semantics of it that got them only 60 games. Luno, he says, is a little bit tougher one. He says Luno got his year, but Luno, the Mets have an opening, but Luno, he certainly would speak the same business and financial language as owner Steve Cohen. Cohen is assistant. He does not want to train someone on his dime to do his job. Luno would need no training. But the Mets, more than any team, need not associate right now with scandal, considering their persistent dysfunction. Plus, Luno doesn't have a lot of friends, he says, in the business. because Luna was just about Astros, was about business. He was not about making friends. He was actually, and he did the culture that he created here. It was cutthroat numbers, and all of those things.
But, some of those analytics guys are also isolationists, and they're not. You know, I don't think Daryl is a big chummy, let's go have a beer guy.
No.
In basketball. I think they are. I think personality wise, Leno falls closer to Daryl Morey than he would to Dennis Lindsay.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And now he's not a chummy guy. He says Luno had a reputation for not treating people well. What I found surprising every year was how many people left the organization.
It was very quietly a concern.
Yeah.
We talked about it at different times. Like, well, that's strange to win a World Series and then lose like three or four people off your scouting staff.
Who
and then,
didn't get huge promotions.
No.
That took lateral jobs.
Yeah. Or they got rid of. Yeah. Also, they got rid of. But it was weird to see basically your infrastructure gutted. I guess the pillars, the big pillars were there other than when Reed Ryan, you know, had to go. That was, you know, that was when one of the pillars started to go. Brandon Taubman, we know, had, you know, chased himself out of town.
Too, yeah.
But you know what's funny, though, is that's why I think behind-the-scenes stuff, people get mad at Allison Footer and to a lesser extent, well, not for me, Jeff Passan, but some of the national writers. And then Allison is a local/national. Richard Justice had some of the same.
He gets a
same
bunch
concerns
of crap.
I think it's because they know stuff that we don't know. Like, they had information about what was going on behind the scenes with people who worked there that we never heard about. And I think that's one of the reasons that some of them had an issue with the Astros, you know, toxic organization. We never heard any of that stuff. That was brand new to me.
Right.
And that's after 19. By the way, I had nothing to do with 17.
Well, if
it's
you looked
19.
At the product on the field, it was, we love each other, happy, the happiest team. That was one of the best teams to cover. But the front office wasn't the same.
Yeah,
it
apparently
wasn't
not.
All happy.
No.
And slapping each other on the back and team
not.
And family and love and all that stuff. It obviously wasn't. Here's something I didn't know. In 2012, in Luno's first year taking over, before he could have influence on production out of a feeder system, just 27 players in the majors had been signed to their original pro contract by the Astros. Second fewest in Major League Baseball. Uncle Drayton, we know. The farm system fell apart under Uncle Drayton. He didn't give a rat's ass. He didn't want to pay players. I think he hated the system more. Why I got to pay those players over there when they're not even playing for the Houston Astros?
Well, but they kept. But that was also GMs. They would keep their young players in the system forever. Like, man, a 25, 26-year-old rookie was the norm.
Well, yeah.
That was the norm.
Yeah, right.
You'd
right.
never saw anyone 22 or 23.
But those guys didn't make it up to the majors. They did a poor job of identifying talent before Jeff Luno got here. The Astros were the first to heavily use technology in the field, particularly to help pitchers. And what Houston has received, and it's here's what they did. This year, do you know how many major leaguers were signed to their first contract by the Astros?
How many?
At the time Luno took over, just 27 players in the majors that signed their first contract with the Astros. You know how many this year?
How many?
75.
Throughout the system.
Throughout Major League Baseball.
How low
is
that
only
number?
Is that the Major League high, but it's 14 more than the Yankees.
Throughout Major League high.
Throughout Major League Baseball signed their first contract with the Astros, which means that Luno was unbelievable at finding Major League talent. Now, it had to be dispersed because you only got a 40-man roster, but there's 75, which is 14 more than the Yankees and Cardinals, who are in second place. That is an unbelievable system that can find talent. And we're seeing it now, too, with a bunch of rookies that are coming up. The Garcias and the Myers and the I mean, it is unbelievable how good the Astros are or were under Luno.
That's unbelievable.
That is unbelievable.
But that's how high. But that... They've isolated, they've evaluated talent, and then they've developed talent. But I think, all that's getting back to the original point. Yeah, I do think that the Jeff Luno, I think a lot of times when you have analytics-based people who are hardcore and that's how they live their lives, I do think, I know this is going to sound like I'm generalizing, but I think this is accurate in meeting a lot of these people. They are, a lot of times, not going to be, they're not going to have the same personalities. they're not, a lot of times they're more withdrawn. They're a little bit more, they're certainly less charismatic when it comes. I mean, they live there, and that goes for Daryl. It goes for my buddy Tyler Oberle, who's the analytics director. Goes for Jeff Leno. Goes for
Kenny Doran.
Kenny Van Doren. Yeah. But when you look at them, I think they're personality-wise, these are guys who see things a certain way. Now, baseball's a little different because a lot of people see things like that.
And I kind of think like analytics guys, kind of feel like they're smarter than you.
Yeah, they do. No, they feel like they're the smartest guys in the room. In general, they do feel like they're superior.
Yeah. And
that's not even a slam.
The analytics on fourth down was a big deal. And
they do feel like they're a little bit superior.
Yeah. Yeah, they do.
And when you deal with that, you tend to alienate other people.
Yeah.
And you also tend to subconsciously maybe rub people the wrong way in discussions when you talk to them.
Yeah.
I've seen it happen.
No. I've
definitely seen it happen before where people just don't like, you know, and I think Jeff Leno may be one of those guys. Do you know people who are chummy with like, I like Daryl fine. You weren't friends with Daryl Morey.
No, he was friendly. Yeah, you'd be friendly.
And he might do something. Yeah, I mean, I like the general manager part of him. But he also was, and he also is to this day, he's a little bit rabbit-eared. He's a little bit thin-skinned about certain stuff. And I think analytics guys can get like that. I think the very brilliant people will get like that because they're like, I can't deal with these dummies.
Right.
Daryl got pissed off at me one time when I was at 790 because he accused me of data dredging. I told you this because I kept bringing up to him and
If you're using his analytics against him, then you're data dredging.
All I said was Ryan Anderson was struggling shooting at home but shot better on the road. Or it was one or the other. Split was huge. It's like, that's data dredging. And I said, what do you mean? What is data dredging? Because you need to, and he sent me a Google link to data dredging. Mm-hmm. And I realized it's pulling up. It's trying to handpick certain data points to make a point for yourself, but it's not a true. But only I was right. Mm-hmm. He couldn't shoot.
No,
the sample it's not size.
Data dredging.
The sample size extended into two full years. Yeah. That's not data dredging.
No, that's not data dredging. It's not data dredging to look at Lance McCullers and say, "Wow, he sucked on the road before this year. Now he's really good." That's different. 759 ESPN 97.5. Anyway, if you want to look up this, I found that Joel Sherman. I find anything hard to disagree with him. And if he's disgusted by this cheating scandal, oh well. And if he thought that Hinch and Cora should have gotten more than just 60 games because they were supposed to get 162. Oh well, I can see his point. Good for those guys that they only had 60 games, but I could certainly see his point on all of these things. And oh, by the way, what he's saying in this article is that the Astros are proving that they're really, really, really good, and they're going to prove it again by winning the World Series this year. He didn't say that. I did.
I don't 8 care o'clock. With somebody being pissed off about the cheating stuff. That's fine.
No, that's fine.
But now you
got to
deal.
But he's not. Actually.
But
now he's saying that the Astros are good.
Right. But now you got to deal with them in real life.
Right. This 8 o'clock. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Please stand by.